I'd like to introduce Bea Mee from Caltech, who will be telling us about another subject that Bill was interested in, the finding surfaces of mineral genus inside of the atoms.
Okay, thank you, Dylan. Well, it's my great pleasure to be here, and I'm honored to be invited to this conference, and I wish to thank the organizers for giving me this opportunity. Well, I met Bill Thurston in 2004 at the Cornell Topology Conference here. I remember at that conference, the last talk was given by him, and the title is What's Next? Well, although I didn't have a chance to interact with him much, I did learn a lot about Bill's work and his point of view of mathematics from his students and from other people. So I remember when I was in graduate school, my advisor, Dave Gabay, he always told me, well, Thurston said this, and Thurston did that, blah, blah, blah. So once I proved a trivial result, and he said, well, Bill Thurston said, so every great mathematical theorem consists of trivial observations. And also he told me I didn't have to finish my thesis as early as possible because Bill Thurston only finished his thesis in the fifth year in graduate school. But it's a great thesis. So the topic I'm going to talk about today was influenced by his thesis. Okay, so the plan of the talk is, in the first part, I want to talk about the Thurston norm. I gave an overview of Thurston norm. And then I want to talk about how his insight play an important role in the development of Hilgard floor homology. And then the third part, I want to talk about an analog of Thurston norm. So that's the rational genus bound. And finally, I want to talk about the Z2 Thurston norm and its applications to triangulations. Well, okay, so the first part is Thurston norm. So that's something he did before he switched his interest to hyperbolic geometry. It's an analog of the Cypher genus, or I should say it's a generalization of the Cypher genus. So you know every knot in S3 is the boundary of a compact oriented surface, so which is called a Cypher surface. So for example, the unknot is the boundary of a disk, and this trifold is the boundary of this genus 1 surface. So the genus of a knot is defined to be the minimal genus of all Cypher surfaces. And there's a classical bound to the Cypher genus from the Alexander polynomial. So that is, suppose you have the Alexander polynomial where the highest term is an, the highest coefficient is an, which is non-zero. And then the genus of the knot is bounded below by the degree of the Alexander polynomial. So that is n is less than or equal to g. And this bound is not sharp. For example, there are infinitely many non-trivial knots with trivial Alexander polynomial. So in this case, the left-hand side is zero, but the right-hand side is always positive. So that's a classical result. And in 1976, Bill Thurston introduced the concept of a Thurston norm. So suppose you have a compact oriented surface with connected components S1 to Sn. Then we define the complexity of S chi minus to be, so for each component, you either take the negative or the characteristic or zero, depending on which one is larger. And then you take the sum. So that's a good complexity for surfaces. And now, if you have a compact oriented three manifold, and you have a homology class in either H2 M or H2 M boundary of M, And then the first norm, x of a, is defined to be the minimal value of x minus. So for all surfaces representing the homology class. And the concept is a natural generalization of Cypher genus. So if you have a Cypher surface, you can think of it as a properly embedded surface in the exterior of the knot. And then the generator, you take a generator of H2M relative to boundary, which is isomorphic to Z. Then the third norm of this is essentially the genus. So it's basically 2G minus 1, except when K is the unknot. So that's a very simple definition. And then he proved the two basic properties. The first is homogeneity. So that is, if n is an integer, then the norm of na is equal to the absolute value of n times the norm of a. And the second is the triangle inequality. The point is, if you use these two properties, you can extend the third norm homogeneously and continuously to a semi-norm on the homology group with real coefficients. The reason that I call it a semi-norm is that the function x vanishes on a subspace of H2. So the subspace is generated by the homology classes of spheres, disks, torus, and annuli. So if for this surface, the complexity is zero. So the search norm is zero on this subspace generated by these homology classes. And similar to the case of the genus bound from the degree of Alexander polynomial, there is also a lower bound to the certain norm in terms of Alexander polynomial of M. So that's a result of McMullen. And then if you consider the unit ball of the certain norm, then Searsen proved that it's a convex polytope. And also all the vertices are rational numbers. All the vertices are rational points. And the convex polytope is symmetric in the origin. And people often call it the Searsen polytope. So for example, here is a picture from his paper, his original paper defining the third norm. So this, you can see, it's the picture was prepared by his son, Nathan Thurston. And in this network, if you take any convex polygon, which is symmetric in the origin, then it can be realized as the unit sphere of the certain norm for some three manifold of M. So for example, say this one. Yeah, so this one is the convex, the unit ball for some three manifold. And there are a lot of possibilities for the polytope of certain norm. Well, and then he related the certain norm to taut foliations. So we learned taut foliations from Dusa's talk. Basically, his theorem said that if you have a taut foliation on a three manifold, and suppose the taut foliation has a compact leaf, then the compact leaf attains the minimal chi minus in its homology class. So this gives you a way to precisely compute the Searsen norm. You just need to find a taut foliation. Well, but it's not an easy task to really construct a taut foliation on the three manifold. So, and in the proof, he used the technique he developed by Rosari and by himself in his thesis. Well, and then Gabay proved a converse to this theorem. So his theorem basically says that if you have a surface which minimizes the chi minus in the homology class, then there exists a tautomorphization such that the surface consists of compact leaves of the foliation. So these two theorems relate, so they relate the Thurston norm with tautomorphizations. So the first one is if you have a tautomorphization, then you can compute the Thurston norm. And the second one is if you know the Thurston norm, then you can construct a tautomorphization. Okay, so that's a review about the basic theory of Thurston norm. Okay, and then comes to the second part, Hegel floor homology. To introduce Hegel floor homology, we first review the definition of spin C structures. Well, I'm not going to really define spin C structures to you. The only thing you need to know is suppose you have an oriented three manifold, then the set of spin C structures is a fine set over the second cohomology group. Well, by a fine set, I mean that there is a faithful and a transitive action of the second cohomology group on the set of spin C structures. And we denote the action by addition. So you have a spin C structure and a cohomology class alpha, then you can get another spin C structure S plus alpha. And the action is faithful and transitive. So whenever you have such an action, then there is a one-to-one correspondence between the set spin C structures with the group. So you have a one-to-one correspondence between the two sets. However, the correspondence is not canonical because you have to fix a base spin C structure first. But the difference between any two spin C structures is a well-defined element in the cohomology class, in the cohomology group. And moreover, for any spin C structure, you can define the first Chen class also in the second cohomology group, satisfying this equation. So the correspondence here is basically twice the correspondence here. Okay, so that's an introduction to spin C structures. So that's what you have to, so that's something you need to know about spin C structures. And then if you have a closed oriented connected three manifold with a spin C structure, then Oswald Szabo defined a package of invariants. So for example, HF hat and HF plus. And for example, HF hat is a finitely generated abelian group. And the other invariant is slightly more complicated. In the simplest example, the HF hat of the three sphere is isomorphic to the singular homology of a point. And the HF plus of a three sphere is isomorphic to the singular homology of CP infinity. So that's the simplest case. And then it's not hard to prove for each Y, there are only finitely many spin C structures with a non-trivial Hegel floor homology group. So HF hat is non-zero if and only if HF plus is non-zero. And this happens only for finitely many spin C structures. So that means the support of the Hegel floor homology is a finite set in the set of spin C structures. And as we are going to see, it's this support of Hegel floor homology which matters in the computation of a Thurston norm. Okay, so the theorem of Oswald Szabo is the Thurston norm of a homo. Oh, sorry. So this should be A. A is a homology class in H2. Then XA it can be computed from the Hilgard floor homology. So as long as you know the support of Hilgard floor homology, then you can compute the Thurston norm. So that's a practical way to compute the Thurston norm. So there are computer algorithms to compute the Hilgard floor homology of a three manifold. And then if you compute that, then you figure out the support of Hilgard floor homology. Then you know the Thurston norm of the three manifold. Linear program, well, actually I should say neither of this is an effective way to compute that. So linear programming, I'm not sure you can just do a three manifold with like a 10 or 11 or 12 tetrahedral. I don't know about that. Yeah, I think it's hard to do that.
The computational time for something like this is super exponential in the size. So it's theoretically, I mean, I don't think it's really been implemented in many cases, but theoretically the time is going to be super exponential, which is going to be worse than like Hocken normal surface theory, which is simply exponential.
Yeah. But I think in practice, in many examples, people just use branched surface to compute the surface. And this theorem can be viewed as a generalization of McMullen's Alexander bound for the Thurston norm, because if you take the Euler characteristic of HF plus, you just get the coefficients in Alexander polynomial. So basically, the theorem can be regarded as a generalization of the Alexander bound. However, it's a sharp bound, so you can exactly compute the Thurston norm from this. So the previous theorem is about closed three-manifold, and also there is a version of the theorem for a manifold with a torus boundary. So, for example, if you have a knot, then one can define the knot floor homology, which is a bigraded abelian group. So this defined by Auschwitz-Zabel and Rasmussen, and the theorem is the genus of the knot. It can also be read from the knot floor homology. So that's also a way to compute the genus of a knot. So if you can compute the knot floor homology of the knot. And you can generalize to links in three sphere and also to links in any closed three manifolds. So basically it tells you for manifold, a closed manifold or a closed manifold with boundary, you can compute the Thurston norm from the Hilgard floor invariant. Okay, so I want to say a few words about the proof. The original proof of of Auschwitz-Zabel builds on Thurston, Gabay's work on Thurston norm and Todd foliations. So that's something we talked about before. And then it also depends on many deep results in contact and symplectic topology due to many people. And I guess the first thing one should say is a result of Eliasberg and Thurston. So this have been talked about by Dusa in the morning. And Eliasberg and Thurston's result basically said that if you have a foliation, then you can approximate it by a context structure. And if the foliation is taut, then the context structure has a better property. And also a deep theorem of Giroux. So that says that any context structure is supported by an open book. But that's just the converse to a theorem of Thurston and Winkenkemper, who proves that if you have an open book, then you can construct a context structure. and also a theorem of Donaldson. And that's to convert to a generalization of a theorem of Thurston. So this was mentioned by Dosa in the morning. So that's in his two-page paper. He introduced a way to construct symplectic structures on manifolds, and then people generalize it to other cases. And Donaldson basically proved a converse to this theorem. And also a more recent work of Ilyashenko and Etner. So you can find that in almost every ingredient of the proof, you can find the search things behind the proof. So now with the techniques we have now, we can bypass this contact and symplectic results, but we still need to use Thurston and Gabay's original work on Thurston norm and on sutured manifolds. It's amazing that Thurston himself didn't do much work on contact and symplectic geometry, but he really provided a lot of new insights into the field, and it turns out these are highly influential. Okay, so we have we still have a lot of time. So now here is the third part, the rational genus bound. Suppose we have a rationally non-homologous knot, namely the rational homology class of the knot is zero. And then similar to Cypher surface, you can define something called the rational Cypher surface. So that's a properly embedded oriented surface in the exterior of the knot. And we require that the boundary consists of coherently oriented parallel curves. So here is a local picture. So here you should imagine that there are several branches of the surface at the point, at the knot. And then all the boundary orientations are the same. So the orientation of the boundary is coherent with the orientation of the knot. So that's something called a rational Cypher surface. And then Calegaria and Gordon defined a rational genus. So this is similar to the definition of the genus of a knot, and also to the definition of a Thurston norm. So it's the minimum of chi minors of F, but you should divide it by. Right, so it's basically the Cypher surface, but now the boundary can go along the knot several times. So you allow the boundary go along the
go in the same direction.
Yeah, they should be in the same direction. So you allow the boundary go along the knot several times. Well, so you need to take the chi minus of F, but you should divide it by two times this number. So this number, mu dot boundary of F, is basically how many times the boundary of F goes along the knot. And the factor two here, they chose the factor to make it similar to the genus of knot. So for example, if the knot is really non-homologous and non-trivial, then the rational genus is 2gk minus 1 over 2, which is gk minus 1/2. So in the classical case, the rational genus is not really the genus, but the genus minus 1/2. All right, so that's the definition for rational genus. And then, given a torsion homology class, so in the torsion part of H1, you can define theta A, so this homology class A, you can define theta A to be minimal for all knot in Y, such that the knot is in this homology class and take 2 times GR. Okay, so this 2 is just a matter of convention. So you can take any knot and consider the rational genus and take any knot in the homology class and consider the rational genus. And the minimum of them is defined to be theta A. So this was introduced by Turayev as an analog of Searson norm. So you can find that the definition is quite similar to the definition of Searson norm. And in fact, it measures the complexity of certain folded surfaces representing homology classes in H2Y with coefficients in Q over Z. So in this picture, if you think of all the branches are glued together along the knot, then you get a folded, then the geometric object you get is called a folded surface. So it's like a branched surface, but with only one singular set, only one component of the singular locus. So this is called a folded surface by Turayev. And a folded surface represents a homology class in this homology group. And he gave a lower bound to theta A in terms of his torsion function. And he asked whether the bound is sharp for length spaces. So as a remark here, by definition, his lower bound is always less than 1. So you cannot hope to get a bound better than 1. Okay, so that's a function on the torsion part of H1. So it's an analog of the Searson norm, but of course it's not the original Searson norm because it's not really a norm. It's only defined on a finite set. Well, for this function theta, you can get a lower bound in terms of the correction terms in Hilgard flow homology. So here is a brief introduction to correction terms. So if you have a rational homology sphere, Y, then there is an absolute Maslow Q gradient on the Hilgard flow homology. So the gradient of Hilgard flow homology is not in Z. The natural way to assign a gradient to Hilgard flow homology is you should assign the gradient in Q. Then in this case, there is a canonical subgroup in HF plus, which is isomorphic to the singular homology of CP infinity, but you should shift the gradient by D. So here D is a rational number. If you remember the example of three sphere, for three sphere, HF plus is exactly the singular homology of CP infinity. You don't have to shift the gradient. But now, you need to shift the gradient to get the correct canonical subgroup in HF plus. So this D is called the correction term of YS. So the meaning of a correction term is that you use this to correct the gradient. So that's my guess. Okay, now we consider the length spaces. So we orient the length space as the P over Q surge on S3. Then the correction terms of length spaces LPQ can be computed by the formula. So for S3, the correction term is 0, as we said. And then for LPQI, you can compute it by computing the correction term for LQR. So here, R is the reduction of P modular Q. So this is a funny recursive formula. So with this recursive formula, then it's easy to compute the correction terms for any length space. And if you are familiar with the Dedekind sums in number theory, then you will find that the recursive formula is very similar to to Dedekind sums. So in fact, there are closed formulas for the correction terms involving the Dedekind sums. So that's given by Nemesi and Tangi, or in terms of the Dedekind Rademacher sums. So that's given by Jabuka, Robinson, and Wang. Okay, so the correction terms of length spaces are related to some important functions in number theory. And then we can get a bound to the rational genus in terms of correction terms. So the theorem, so here's a joint work with Zhong Tao Wu. We prove that if you have a rational homology sphere, and you have a knot and a rational Cypher surface, then you have an inequality, so 1 plus minus of chi f divided by this multiplicity of boundary on the knot. So this is bounded below by maximal for the difference of any of two correction terms. So here, s plus Poincaré dual of k. So remember, there is an action of h upper 2 on the spin C structures denoted by addition. So S plus Poincaré dual of K is just another spin C structure. So for these two spin C structures, you compute the difference of the correction terms. And for all spin C structures, you take the maximal. Then this gives you a lower bound to the to this. Well, but the left-hand side is basically the theta, the function theta defined by Turayev. So the right-hand side only depends on the manifold and the homology class of K. And the left-hand side is basically 1 plus theta A for the homology class of K. So this gives you a lower bound for 1 plus theta. So that means it gives you a lower bound to the rational genus of any knot in this homology class. Well, so if you have a bound, whenever you have a bound, you want to ask whether the bound is sharp. So what we can prove is in some important cases, the bound is sharp. So in general, the bound is not sharp. But in some important cases, the bound is sharp.
So can I ask a question about the last slide?
Yes.
So I'm looking at this difference here. If you took the knot and just oriented it the other way, do these terms, if they were positive before, just become negative?
The point is there is a symmetry in the correction terms. So actually, if you consider all these numbers, then they are symmetric in the origin. They are symmetric in zero. So if you can see n a number r here, then minus r is also in this set. So if you you change the orientation of k, you get the same answer. Well, it's a good question. So actually, I think this bound is independent of Turayev's bound. So in some cases, the bound is better than Turayev's bound. But in some cases, it's not better. Turayev's bound is better than this one. So that's quite interesting to me. You get two bounds which are clearly related, but they are independent. So now let me talk about the case where the bound is sharp. So suppose you have a rational homology sphere. It's called an L space if the rank of the Hilgard floor homology is equal to the order of the first homology with integer coefficient. So the point is if you have learned some Hilgard floor homology, then you know the left-hand side is always greater than or equal to the right-hand side. And so if the inequality is actually an equality, then we say the manifold is an L space. Examples of L spaces include length spaces. So that's the reason why we call it L space, because it's a generalization of length spaces. But it's more than the length spaces. Of any spherical space form is also an L space. And also you can take the double branch cover of S3 branched along alternating links. So in particular, you take a two-bridge link, then the double branch cover is a length space. So this also generalizes the length spaces. And there are more examples of L spaces. So that's really a large class of three manifolds. And they have some interesting properties. Well, here is another definition. So suppose we have a three manifold and a rationally non-homologous knot in the three manifold. We say it's a floor simple knot if the rank of the knot floor homology is equal to the rank of the Hilgard floor homology of the ambient manifold. So here the left-hand side is a knot floor homology of the knot. So again, if you have learned some Hilgard floor homology, then you know in general there is an inequality. The left-hand side is always greater than or equal to the right-hand side. So when the inequality becomes an equality, then we say the knot is a floor simple knot. So the theorem we proved is this bond we talked about before. The bond for theta is sharp for the homology classes represented by floor simple knots in L spaces. So in fact, floor simple knots in L spaces attain the minimal values of the rational genus in their homology classes. So it seems to me this theorem is in the same spirit as Thurston's theorem. Thurston said that in some cases, if the surface is the compact leaf of a taut foliation, then the surface attains the minimal values of the complexity in the homology class. And this theorem said that floor simple knots in L spaces also attain the minimal value. Yeah, of course, it's not as great as Thurston's theorem because we don't have the inverse. So just like Gabay proved a converse to Thurston's theorem. In this case, the converse is certainly not true. Yeah, so that's something I'm going to talk about. So here's the simplest examples of floor simple knots, the simple knots. So suppose we have a genus 1 Hilgard splitting of LPQ. So namely, you take two solid toroids and glue them together along the boundary. And you have two meridian disks of the two solid toroids. And you can always make the two meridians intersect in exactly P points. So here is a picture. So you have two solid toroids and glue them together and a meridian disk here and also a meridian disk here and they intersect in P points. Now you pick any two intersection points. You can always connect them with an arc in one disk and also with an arc in another disk. And the union of these two arcs give you a knot. So this knot is called a simple knot in LPQ. So the definition is quite simple. So that's the reason we call it a simple knot. It turns out that... Yes?
It's a one bridge.
Right, yes. But it's more than just a one bridge knot. There is exactly one simple knot up to a isotope in each homology class. So here the convention is that the trivial knot is also a simple knot. You can also regard the unknot as a simple knot. Then there is exactly one simple oriented knot up to isotope in each homology class. Okay, so that's the definition for simple knots. It's quite simple. And the fact is simple knots in length spaces are floor simple. And we just mentioned that there is exactly one simple node in each homology class. And they are floor simple. So that means that by our theorem, we can so these simple nodes give you an exact bound for the function theta. So the theta of length spaces can be computed from the correction terms. And the simple nodes are genus minimizers in their homology classes. And this proves the conjecture of Rasmussen and also answers the previous question we mentioned of Turiyev. And Rasmussen proved the special case when theta is less than 1. But our computation shows that certainly theta can be larger than 1. So theta can be quite large for length spaces. For example, in LP1, if you do the computation, it's an elementary computation, you can compute theta A. So here A is a homology class represented by a number from 0 to p minus 1. Then theta A is given by this. So if A is 1/2 p, then theta A should be about a quarter of p. So theta can be as large as possible. So that means that there exists some homology classes. In this homology class, the lower bound of theta of the rational genus should be very large. So you cannot find a small genus not in this homology class. And the question is related to the question of length space surgery. So a theorem of Hayden and Rasmussen said that if you have a length space surgery on knot in S3, then the dual knot, which is, if you know the definition of Dehn surgery, so a Dehn surgery is you remove the neighborhood of a knot, then you replace it with a solid torus. Then the core of the solid torus is called the dual knot. So you have a dual knot in the length space. They prove that the dual knot is a floor simple knot, and it's a rational genus minimizer in its homology class. And there are similar results for length space surgeries on knots in length spaces studied by Boileau, Boyer, Sibanu, and Walsh. And all for surgery, length space surgery on knots in S1 cross S2 studied by Sibanu, Baker, Bach, and Lacuona. Basically, such theorem says that it's an interesting problem to find the rational genus minimizers in length spaces. So because if you can find all the rational genus minimizers in length spaces, then you can solve the length space surgery problem, also known as the Berge conjecture. So, yes.
So is that just a matter of proving that the rational genus minimizers are one bridge?
Yeah, in some cases, we know it's one bridge. Yeah. Certainly, it's great if we can prove they are one bridge. But I guess it's quite hard to prove that. I think you know what I'm going to say. So when the theta is very small, if it's smaller than 1/2, and there is another condition, then Baker proved that any rational genus minimizer should be a one bridge knot. So as long as the knot is one bridge, then I guess it's not hard to classify them. So I think in this case, if theta is very small, then it's probably not hard to find all the genus minimizers. However, as we have seen, theta can be very large. So this condition may not be true in general. The Rasmussen asked the question, so whether simple knots are the unique genus minimizers in length spaces. So since they are so simple, it's quite natural to expect that they are the unique genus minimizers in length spaces. But unfortunately, it's not true. So George Green and I constructed many examples. So I'm not going to state the theorem. Basically, there are a lot of examples of non-uniqueness of genus minimizers in length spaces. So they are more than we expected. However, all the examples we have found have large theta. So it's possible that the uniqueness is still true when theta is small. So for example, when theta is less than 1/2, probably you can use Baker's result to prove the uniqueness. And the most interesting case is when theta is less than 1, because this is the case which is related to Berge conjecture. And so if you have any idea about proving the uniqueness, you can contact me. Okay, the simplest example is in L81. So that's the 1-2 cable of the 1-2 torus knot. So here's the picture of this knot. You do 8 surgery on this component, then the other component is a knot in L81. So this knot is a genus minimizer in its homology class. But it's not the simple knot, because the simple knot in this homology class is the 1-4 torus knot. So it's not the and these two knots are certainly different, because one knot is a cable knot and the other knot is a torus knot. So they are two different knots. But they are both genus minimizers. So even in a manifold as simple as this one, you can have non-uniqueness. Okay, so I have 10 minutes to talk about the last part, the Z2 search norm and the triangulations. So basically, in some oriented three manifolds, you can find non-orientable surfaces. So for example, in RP3, you have RP2. So RP2 is non-orientable, but RP3 is orientable. If you have a non-orientable surface in a orientable three-manifold, then the surface represents a non-zero class in H2 with Z2 coefficients. And conversely, if you have a non-zero class here, then you can find a non-orientable surface representing this homology class. So then we can ask, what's the minimal genus among all the non-orientable surfaces representing this homology class? And this number is denoted by HYA. So this is the smallest genus among all non-orientable surfaces representing the homology class A. And this concept is closely related to the Z2 search norm. So similar to the Z2 search norm, you can define Z2 search norm to be the minimal chi minus of surfaces representing A. So probably the Z2 search norm is a better definition for this phenomenon. You need to find the minimal chi minus of surface representing this A. Okay, so also a natural generalization of the search norm. Well, the point is, when the order of K is 2, then any rational separate surface give you a closed non-orientable surface f hat in Y, such as the beta of f hat is K. Here, beta is the Bolkestein homomorphism. So it's from H2Y with Z2 coefficient to H1Y with Z coefficient. So this relates theta with a non-orientable genus. So let's go back to the picture of this rational surface. Right. Okay, so imagine you have 2 branches instead of 3 branches. So imagine you have 2 branches of the surface here. So if the order of K in the homology is 2, then you can always find a surface with 2 branches here. So if you have only 2 branches, then you can always glue the 2 branches together by either an annulus or a Möbius band to get a closed surface. But this surface is certainly non-orientable because the boundary orientation are the same on K. So when you glue them together, you always get a non-orientable surface. So when the order of K in the homology is 2, you can always get a non-orientable surface. And conversely, if you have a non-orientable surface, then you can always find a knot on the surface, such that the order of this knot is 2, and the knot is exactly in the homology class of beta of F. So this relates theta with the non-orientable genus of F. So the proposition is if you have a non-zero class A in H2 with Z2 coefficients, and suppose the genus, the minimal genus here is at least 2, then we have this. So this theta is related to a non-orientable genus, minimal non-orientable genus in 3 manifolds. So as a corollary to our previous bound, then we have a lower bound to H. So that is H is greater than or equal to 2 times of this number. Well, now we know for length spaces, the bound from the correction terms is sharp. So in particular, in this case, the bound is sharp. So from this formula, we can actually compute the non-orientable genus of surfaces in length spaces. And of course, there is a non-orientable surface if and only if P is an even number. So if and only if P is an even number, there's a non-orientable genus surface. And the minimal non-orientable genus can be computed from this. So that's actually a classical result of Braden and Wood from the 60s. Our theorem here gives you a new proof of this classical theorem. And actually, for length spaces, in general, right, in this case, you can do better. So Levine, Ruberman, and Strelay, they proved that the bound, so this bound is actually also a lower bound to the non-orientable genus in Y cross I. So not only for surfaces in Y, but also for surfaces in Y cross I. So you can also give a lower bound to the genus of surface in Y cross I in terms of this. So you get a bound in this case. Well, but what's interesting is the bound in 3 dimensions. So in 3 dimensions, we get a lower bound to the non-orientable genus. So when I realized that there is a bound to the non-orientable genus, I didn't think it's interesting, because who cares about non-orientable surfaces? You can always take a double cover, then it's an orientable surface. But then Danny Ruberman told me the result of Braden and Wood, and also Ian Eagle told me the result of Braden and Wood has been used by Rubinstein and his collaborators to prove some interesting result. So for example, they use this to study the complexity of 3 manifolds. So we all know every 3 manifold is triangulable. So you can find a triangulation of the 3 manifold. So there is a simple invariant of a 3 manifold. That is the minimal number of tetrahedron you need to pseudo-linearly triangulate Y. So that means the tetrahedron may not be embedded. So you may have, so in many cases, the triangulation has only one vertex. So this is called the complexity of Y. So this invariant certainly is an invariant of a 3 manifold. And it's easy to define, and it's computable because you can enumerate. So for example, you take 10 tetrahedron, then you can enumerate all 3 manifold you can build from 10 tetrahedron. Okay, so that's something you can do. But that's not really a practical way to compute the complexity. So in general, it's hard to compute that. The difficulty is to find a lower bound to C of Y. because you can always construct a triangulation. But how do you find a lower bound to this? So this is the first lower bound to the complexity. It's due to Jacob Rubinstein and Thielmann. So they said that if you have a rank 2 subgroup of H2 with Z2 coefficient, so since it's a rank 2 subgroup, so there are only 3 non-zero elements, then the number of tetrahedron is bounded below by this 2 plus the sum of the Z2 certain norms of the three elements. So that's a lower bound to the complexity. And then it reduces the problem to the computation of the Z2 certain norm. Because we don't have a good way to compute the Z2 certain norm. Now with our theorem, we can have a lower bound to the Z2 certain norm in terms of correction terms. So the complexity of a manifold is bounded below in terms of correction terms in cases discussed by them. So I think that's really an unexpected application of Hilgard floor homology. So you the definition of Hilgard floor homology uses Hilgard splitting, but we don't even know if there is a relationship between Hilgard genus or Hempel distance with the Hilgard floor homology of three manifold. But now we know there is a relationship between Hilgard floor homology and the number of tetrahedron you need to triangulate the manifold. So that's an unexpected application. So what? Oh, I just lost a slide. Okay, well, anyway, there is an example. Really? Oh, sorry about that. So there is an example of a three braid. So for this three braid, we can compute in our theorem, we can compute a lower bound to this complexity. And then we can also construct a triangulation with this many tetrahedron, so we get a bound to the complexity in this range. But Rubinstein told me you can do better. You can, so this remainder can be like 2n something. So yeah. But anyway, so that's what I want to talk about. Yes, I think if, say, for example, if the knot is an aerospace knot and you do a large surgery, then the dual knot is flawless.
Any more questions?
Could you say what sigma L is? L is some
3. Yeah, L is a 3 braid. I don't know why I lost that. That's, sigma is a double branch cover of some 3 braid. So yeah, the graph was there in the morning, but I don't know why it disappeared.
Someone did surgery.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a double branch cover of some 3 braid.
Can you write on blackboard?
Yeah, so some people may be interested in that. So basically, it's like a. So you take a 3-braid sigma 1 sigma 2 minus 2a1 sigma 1 sigma 2 minus 2a2 and the sigma 1 sigma 2 minus 2a2n. Right, so for this three braid, you can compute the search, Z2 search norm.
Are there any more questions?
Why is it important that the coefficients are negative?
Yeah, because there is an algorithm to compute for alternating.
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah. The question is why is it important to take the negative AI? Because there is an algorithm to compute the correction terms for double brown cover of alternating links. But I think, yeah, probably you can also take a positive, but then there is no existing algorithm. You have to do some work to do that.
Let me just add, right.
Right, oh, really? Okay, so that's great news.